This is not a twist top.
Dude, you're just gonna wrap your shirt around it.
That's the best opening ever.
We're gonna use that for every single one.
Well, that was an auspicious start.
Listen, I'm new to this beer thing, okay? Also, on top of that, when I actually opened it, it didn't make a noise.
No one neither did mine. Hang on, I'll add this later.
Nice. So, friends, and by which I mean friends from the UK. Look,
shit, that's good.
Look what's going on. This thing.
Hi.
Yes.
Tell us how it's going on, guys.
It's going on three.
Three? Three. It literally did go on three. Never mind the fact it counted before.
Time.
We can always use more counting. That's the thing.
So, this is weird.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Gav, you're in charge.
Oh, God.
Oh, nobody wants
baton. Oh, shit.
We're here to talk about two things, and he doesn't even know what one of them is.
Yes, earlier on we were watching the Star Trek episode, uh-huh. And he actually said to me, "This isn't worrying at all. Who is Bones?"
I was hungover.
Now, did you know who Dr. McCoy was, and just not know that he was Bones, or did you not know at all who anyone was?
I was having trouble with most of the characters. I didn't know who Scotty was either.
Oh,
I thought you were joking about that one.
Well, Matt, I think we're doing better already.
He's the Scuffer fellow. That's where that comes from.
Yeah. Oh, guys.
I was hungover. My brain wasn't working.
Can I swap with one of you?
No, sorry. I've learned to compensate for Matt all this time. I don't want to recalibrate.
You got to start over.
So we are here.
Jake, work on this guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
3-4 years. So we're here to discuss, compare and contrast the two great monoliths of science fiction, Star Trek and that other thing.
The two best science fiction series ever. Fuck uh-huh. you, Star Wars.
Yeah, Stargate and Stargate SG-1.
Yes.
Now that I know about.
Stargate and, of course, Blake 7.
Yes. No, of course, your show is a fine little, what do you call it?
Wow, any more disparaging?
Beers?
Ask me after I'm finished this beer and I'll let you know.
I love you guys. And you do a great show that I love.
No, I truly do, and we all have fun together, and really, I don't care if we talk about any of this stuff. We'll just sit here and giggle about stupid shit none of you care about for 2 hours, and that'll be that.
And you'll thank us for it.
Yes. So I believe it is customary on your fine show to discuss the beer that we're drinking and why you chose it.
Well, this beer, yeah. And the reason we chose it.
Yes.
It is Moosehead Lager.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Canadian beer. The reason we chose it is because
3 out of 4 everyone, of us are not Canadian.
It's because everyone can get it.
Excellent reason.
Now, here's a question. It's a Canadian beer, but do you have the writing on it in
Canadian.
In French.
I do not.
Huh.
No. Unless the word lager is Canadian.
Moosehead beer, beer.
Ah.
There is some of it in a different language, but it's not French.
It's French.
Well, they don't care for the French there, so they might not recognize it.
It spells Canada with a K.
What? Yes, they did.
The well-known Dutch author?
Oh, yeah, well-known Dutch
author.
Canada.
So that's really the only reason you chose it is because we could all get it. There's nothing special about this beer or notable.
Well, I like the picture of the moose.
Yes,
it's a good moose picture.
That's a fine moose.
He looks so angry.
Yeah, Gav's happy because he's never had this beer before.
Oh. Well, always happy to indulge you guys there. I've never had any beer before, so.
Really?
You've never had any beer before?
Well, no, that's.
No, you haven't. That's a lie. Yeah. But you're not really a beer drinker. Yeah,
well, I'm sorry to introduce you to this woman.
I grew up in Budweiser country, so no, I have not had any beer at all.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Then sorry to hear that.
I'm sorry to say it.
Balls are
we're on a delay.
I don't think that we are.
Oh, I see. You made a joke. I just got it.
It's a relativistic time. Is
what, are you on a deadline?
Yeah.
This is just like every other show we do.
So.
Gotta make sure we don't get them. Yeah, that's why we chose the beer.
Yes.
And, how drunk are you, Al, at this particular time?
No.
Have you drank any yet?
I have not. I am saving it for a dramatic moment. Nah, you know what? What the hell?
Fuck that. I'm halfway through this thing.
Oh, it's horrible. Jesus Christ. Ah!
It's not the best, no.
I'll have another sip here. Ah, it's still terrible. Okay, so the format we have decided is that we will be swapping, like so many sexual swingers. We will be swapping. What a terrible metaphor that was. And they will be reviewing an episode of Star Trek, and we will be reviewing, what, 7 or 8 episodes of Doctor Who, I think?
I think we're still watching Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think the entirety of Series 23 of Doctor Who. So. I kid, of course. They needed a good pool to choose from, and keeping it to 2-parters really only gave them, like, what, 6 episodes or something? So,
yeah. So we give you a 3-parter.
Yeah, we wanted to widen it so you could choose from more episodes. So there's that.
It didn't widen that much, though, really, did it?
It did.
It added about 5.
It did not add about 5. You've got all the new series.
All right.
That's about 50 in itself.
All right, they're the 1-parters.
Matt, this is what we showed up for.
You've listened to the show. Surely you know this happens.
Not only that, we've spent considerable time with you guys in person. We know that it's not an act, that this just happens all the time.
It's actually beautiful.
Yes, it is. It truly is. So we've decided that you guys will go first with the Star Trek episode that we've chosen for you.
Yes.
And what we wanted to do, we wanted to choose something that sort of embodied what Star Trek is, because English Gav has been bugging me with that question for I don't know how
what
long.
What is a Star Trek?
Well, the episode we chose is Star Trek. Definitively, absolutely Star Trek. Matt, why don't you tell them what we chose and why?
We chose the Corbomite Maneuver.
Yes, we did.
Because it is... of all the episodes of Star Trek we watched of the original series... It was the most essentially Star Trek. We got it's a great episode. You can cut the tension with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, what's his face?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Baylock or Bailey?
Yeah, Baylock. What the hell's his real name? I can't believe I'm blanking on this.
I think it's Baylock, isn't it?
I'm only halfway through this thing. No, the dude that played him.
Oh, Clint Howard.
Baby.
Clint Howard. Ron Howard's little brother. Right? Yeah.
I kept wanting to call him Richie Howard, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, Lionel Richie was known for... No, I got nothing. Now, the big thing that surprised me, and I went back and rewatched it for the show, because we did it on Post-Atomic Horror a good year and a half ago, and I wanted to have it fresh in my mind, is this is only episode 11 in the series, and every character is perfectly defined at this point. It is a very quintessentially Kirk episode. Spock and Bones are where they're supposed to be. Bones is the doctor, Gav.
it was only the third one filmed, though.
Really? That's even more impressive.
The two pilots and then this one.
Wow. That's fantastic.
It's the extremely pissed off guy.
Yeah.
We can't be doing this!
It's great because everything that not only all of Star Trek is about, the exploring the unknown and enemies that actually end up being friends and that sort of thing. It's all right there. And like I say, all the characters sort of come together and sort of crystallize into what they eventually will be. The other thing is we were originally going to choose Darmok, which for me is, you know, even more. If I had to show Star Trek to someone who had never seen Star Trek before, that would be it.
That is pretty quintessentially Trek.
As it happens, Irish Gav recorded Post-Atomic Horror about that very episode.
I did. It was a good one, wasn't it?
It was a fantastic episode.
But it didn't really work for this.
It didn't really work for this. Although, looking back, the Corbomite Maneuver is a lot like it in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There's two guys facing off, and they don't know if they're friends or they're enemies. It teaches you a lot about tolerance and giving a care.
Which is what Trek is all about.
Yes, exactly. No, it's just very, you know, they're very similar in interesting ways. So rather than tipping every single thing about the Corbomite Maneuver, let's let them talk about it.
Okay. Yes, we have this Star Trek episode. So were to do the synopsis as normal, as we called it now, is this some kind of synopsis? It's a Gav's note that he can't remember why he made. So, off I go.
Go.
Navigator Bailey begins the episode as he means to go on, whining. This time about charting new space. He didn't join Starfleet to go where no man's gone before. Meanwhile, Kirk has his quarterly shirt off in sick bay while McCoy berates him. I'm sure this is a slash fiction. Suddenly, a giant Rubik's Cube approaches the ship and Bailey freaks the fuck out. Red alert! Kirk leaps up and urgently charges to the bridge, but first stopping to change and brush his teeth. The cube is like nothing they've seen before. It's probably bigger on the inside than out.
Hey.
Bailey wants to shoot it, and if Worf was born, I'm sure he'd agree. Side fact, Worf's first words were, "This cot has no honor." Later in the briefing room, they decide that the cube is some kind of trap, so warp away from there, but the object is able to keep up and emit radiation. Eventually, Kirk takes the Worf route and shoots it, resulting in a Michael Bay movie. They then travel forward to see if they can meet the intelligence that just tried to kill them. Bailey is given a task to keep him out of the way, supervising drills. Power ones, probably. Kirk eats salad while McCoy berates him. Can't see that being a slash fiction, but anyway. Suddenly, a giant pollen grain appears before the Enterprise. I bet Bailey has hay fever, too. The ship identifies itself as the Vesarius, first Federation flagship. Fancy. Baylock is the captain and wants to dispose of the Enterprise. He gives 10 minutes for the Enterprise and its gallant crew before it's destroyed. Spock manages to use Google image search and find a picture of Baylock, an ugly eating green alien. Kill it with fire! Speaking of ugly people, Gav.
Why do you just describe yourself when you're running over? Reacting to some childhood alien abduction trauma, Bailey freaks out and starts shouting at everyone for not doing anything. There's clearly not enough panicking and breaking stuff for him, so he's sent to his room to cry. Kirk pleads his case, maintaining it was only self-defense, but the alien head isn't having any of it. 7 minutes left. The next tactic they try is to ignore it and hope it goes away, but to their dismay are informed there's now 4 minutes left. Spock analogizes their situation to being in checkmate, and in a patented house moment, Kirk realizes the key is not likening it to chess, but poker, and hails the alien head. He warns that they have a lethal defense system powered by carbamite that has had a 100% lethality rate towards the attacker so far. Hey, don't oversell it. He goes on to say they are growing annoyed at the alien head's foolishness. 1 minute left. Bailey then returns to ask his dad if he can come out of his room yet. Sorry, ask Kirk if he can return to duty. They all watch the timer. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year! The countdown ends without incident. The alien eventually informs the Enterprise that their destruction has been delayed, and if they can prove they have carbamite, the destruction will be cancelled. Not actually having any carbamite, Kirk denies the request. Undeterred by this, the alien dispatches a ship to take the Enterprise, imprison its crew, and then destroy the ship in a controlled manner. Nice to see there's health and safety in space too. Power is then restored to the Enterprise so they can escape later in the episode. The little ship then starts towing the Enterprise and Kirk forms a new plan. A new plan? He forms a new plan. Hope for a mistake. He then activates the ship's engines to put strain on the tractor beam, which completely fucks up the artificial gravity as everyone starts falling to the walls. Eventually, the Enterprise breaks free, and the spaceship runs out of power, sending a distress signal. Kirk takes McCoy and Bailey over to the ship and discover that the alien head is actually a puppet and a bold child on a bed. He explains the distress signal was a test to discover their true intentions. Seizing the opportunity, Kirk decides to rid himself of Bailey and leaves him with the alien to learn about alien cultures. And everyone lives happily tribble after. Did I do that right?
Yeah, close enough. Matt, I give him what, like an 8.5? Good attempt.
I give him 10 stars to his valid crew.
Gav, it's Corbomite. Carbamite something in Star Wars.
I wasn't sure if that was his accent, so I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, I knew.
Yeah. The only point that I would make, Gavin, in your Irish Gavin, in yours, was that you didn't mention that they were Earth minutes. He gave him 10 of your Earth minutes.
Yes, I was going to make a joke on that, but didn't.
You were waiting for me to do the punch up.
I didn't notice that.
Yes, I did like that he took the time to look through the scatters and everything to find out what minutes were.
Right. He Wikipedia'd Earth. Oh, this is their measurement of time. Well.
Okay, oh, yes. Minutes. Spock did Google image search, and then he did Wikipedia to find out.
Right.
He did seem to know everything about.
Why? I do like in the future that the all males have pointy sideburns now. Mm-hmm.
I think that continues into Next Gen, doesn't it? I think
quite Data has pointy sideburns.
Right.
And that their pads that they use are actually bigger than tablets are now.
Well, they look like, I don't know if you guys have this over there, but you probably have something like UPS, like some kind of big package carrier that, you know, delivers things. Yeah. They make you sign for it, and they have a thing exactly like that.
Looks like that, yes.
Right.
They're probably all waiting for packages.
Well, I figure Yeoman Rand brings the coffee and the salad and then the UPS packages.
Maybe that's why the Federation was formed in the first place.
Federation formed?
Yeah. It was an intergalactic space delivery service.
So it's like Futurama?
Yeah.
The UFP is the future version of UPS.
Oh, God.
It just somehow started fighting the Klingons.
Yeah. Listen, we have to get these packages through the Klingon Empire.
Gotta get that serum through.
A Romulan ordered some penis enlargement pills. We need to get them there.
I didn't order any penis enlargement. Who says I did? It was Duras.
Worlds are colliding. So what were your first impressions? I'm curious. We chose this episode. Maybe you guys hate it. I don't know. Irish Gav, I'm pretty sure you didn't. But actually, honestly, English Gav, you're the one I'm really concerned
about. You're the one whose respect I desperately crave.
I don't care about. Go.
What?
What did you think?
You didn't make it. No, I loved it. It's a fantastic episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I, joking aside, your lack of knowledge of Star Trek aside, you are vaguely familiar with who's who and what they're there for and so forth, I assume.
Oh, yeah. I do like Star Trek. I've watched pretty much all of them since TNG. Mm.
Well, I assume
you watch Voyager with Irish Gav.
Right.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Which we will get to.
Must we?
Well, we won't, but you will.
Yeah. Oh, you'll be there.
I have a list that I'm going to review.
He's already written a synopsis, so he doesn't have to watch the episodes again. No, I kind of wanted general opinions before we got into sort of a serious discussion. Just overall, you did both quite like this episode then?
Yeah, I watched it, and I've been watching Next Generation at the moment as well. Mm-hmm. And I just think it holds up really well, mainly because of the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, they're
definitely a character episode.
And they're so clearly defined at this point. You got Kirk doing everything he can, including cheating, to win. You got Spock holding it together when everyone else is freaking out. You got Bones being Bones.
Shouting at people.
Yes.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn it was the third episode.
And
they're so clearly defined, and you can see them.
Yeah, exactly. And
you got fan favorite Bailey complaining.
Well, I was thinking Bones isn't completely formed yet because he's not bitching at Spock, but then I realized that's what Bailey's for.
Yeah.
He's always yelling at you're a computer, you don't care.
I hate having to go where no man's going.
Is Bailey ever seen again?
No.
I probably, Matt, is he heard in books? Because I'm sure he
Baylock
must have been.
Ate him.
Ah, well.
In books, he is seen again in the comics and things. Mm. He becomes an ambassador to the First Federation.
Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, good.
And then he's in something else. But it was completely irrelevant.
Was it Voyager?
Yeah. Yes. Hmm. He was seen in Voyager.
He shows up in Voyager to complain about how lost they all are.
it was a comic, mind you, but it wasn't the, you know.
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
Oh, boy, a Voyager comic.
Yeah, you know, as much as I love Star Trek, I think those two words really still make me cringe in fear. I think Bailey was meant to be sort of an audience identification character. I don't know that he was successful at that, but I think the whole point was...
He's the Barkley of, you know, the next generation Barkley of the original series. He's just worse.
But I think he's there to show you why these people are great. Like, because your reaction as the audience is, are you just going to fire on this thing? What are you, you know, what are you guys crazy? And it's like, well, no, these guys are heroes. See?
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah. I don't understand how he...
About it.
Yep.
I don't understand how he got on the Enterprise.
Well, they mentioned that... well, actually, I can't believe I just said that. No, they mentioned that Bones said...
I know he was promoted.
Bones said he promoted him too early.
Yeah.
Because he saw a bit of himself in Bailey, so...
I'm not sure which bit.
Mm. Ah, comment.
His toupee?
Oh, that come on. You gotta give Shatner credit. He was at his best here. Like, I can't deny he was a handsome man there when he was doing his physical. He was not the paunchy, doughy, sweaty man that he would become by season 3.
Yes.
Like I could.
I admit I did think that when I saw him in Shirt Off. He was, this is an attractive man.
Yeah, that's why he cast him. He's the hero. He's a good
looking
guy.
This is not how I know him.
He hasn't gone to Seed quite yet.
Yeah. No, you can definitely see why they chose him initially.
Space Seed.
Oh, God. That was a Star Trek pun, Gavin.
I'm so proud of you.
He should be ashamed of himself.
This is fun. I'm the only one here that can make jokes about everything.
Yeah, I was thinking that. You do have a bit of a comprehensive knowledge of both things, and the rest of us are sort of in the dark, so.
He is wearing a crown as well.
I am the Burger King. Of course, I'm probably alienating all the Doctor Who viewers. What are you talking about, Gav?
Have you left the video thing on?
Yes, I think I have. Bailey was just... I understand why he was there. He was just annoying.
Well, like I say, I think he was intended to be an audience identification character, but I think... A lot of it was the acting. I think the guy really overplayed his, you know, panicking.
On the other hand, they really captured what it would be like to send a prick into space.
That's a good point. I don't know.
Well, it did seem really over the top when he started freaking out because they weren't attacking.
I wish he just said, I'm freaking out!
You guys don't understand!
Now, this episode had... What are we going to do? It's different colors. It's spinning. It's got that music. Yeah.
And I like when he sheepishly sort of tried to make excuses for him freaking out.
Oh,
the spot.
No, I was saw a bug. Yeah.
I was
I'm allergic to wasps, so I was, you know, really concerned.
I'm allergic to Rubik's Cube.
Well, who isn't?
Mr. Spock, why don't we just paint it all the same color? Why don't we?
So Bailey's really just OCD, then. It bothers him that things are slightly out of place.
Yes.
Yes, like him, the Enterprise.
Everything, really. One thing that sticks out for me back when we did this episode, and it must have been back in episode 4 or 5 of Post-Atomic Horror, way in the beginning.
I think it was episode 11, because you did the cage for the first 6 episodes.
Oh, right. I think we're still doing The Cage.
Yeah.
You're watching The Cage and Doctor Who at the same time.
At the same time. Now, the one thing that jumps out at me about our original thoughts was Matt was really impressed that while Sulu didn't get much to do, he was still sort of cool and kind of making jokes. He was, if anyone's interested, there's only 2 minutes left. You know, like, they only gave him a couple of lines, but he was kind of personable and kind of the funny one, kind of like what Geordi would end up being in the early bits of Next Gen. And, he's kind of charming, and I like that he didn't get much to do, but he was still likable.
I really miss early Sulu.
Yeah.
When he was funny and, like, likable and not just like, hey, my heritage.
Well, as it became the Shatner show.
Thing, Captain.
As they turned it into the Shatner show, guys like him kind of took a back seat, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's been too long.
I'll be in room 121.
What's that?
If anyone's interested, I'll be in room 121.
The Botany Bay. that was a trap. I'm seeing if you're going to take it. Oh, God, this beer is horrible. Jesus.
I'll be honest with you.
You're still drinking that? I finished mine.
I may be halfway, if that.
I'm on to 2.
Oh. Well.
See, we only have one of this.
Thank God.
We have a lot of other beers.
Oh, that's
which I will be drinking shortly.
Oh, yeah, those.
Okay. The music as well, I really liked. I think it's just because it's sort of like, well, because I obviously watched Star Trek, but it's just really nice to watch it again, and the music. I miss the music and the characters and everything.
It was very 60s orchestrated in a good way, like very bombastic and very like of its time. And I like it a lot. Like, you couldn't put music like that in a TV show now.
Which is sad.
No, yeah. Although you should.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you didn't like it, did you?
No, particularly the pieces when the alien shows up, when they've got the alien.
Yeah, that.
That really grated on me.
That music followed it around. Like, when it showed up on a screen, that music would start playing. And then.
I just found it very obtrusive music.
Obtrusive?
Yes.
I can see that.
Well, what does that mean, Gav?
It means I don't like it.
It means shut up.
Well defined.
I even like when Spock pulls a picture of it up on his monitor and then it's playing quietly.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but he turned the volume down, you see.
Yes. Can't concentrate with his crap.
And then Spock's, whenever Kirk's talking about it, you know, about helping Baylock or whatever, he says it's alien. We're going to help this life, alien life, but life nonetheless. I mean, Spock is just, I'm right here.
Wow. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Also the bit where, you know, when the cube's spinning right in front of them, and it's all multicolored. I expected, Spock says something, I really expected him to say, there's no earthly way of knowing what direction we are going.
Now, we had an unfair advantage showing you guys an episode that has been restored, that's been cleaned up. The effects were better, the print was cleaner.
We watched both.
Yeah, we did.
We watched the
enhanced version.
And then we watched the original effects as well.
I would say it still stands up, but I think the cleaned up version obviously is a little better. You get different angles of the Enterprise, you get a clearer look at Baylock's ship. Like, it's just, everything is as it was intended, only better, I think.
Yeah,
it didn't, I think, make actually that much difference to, I mean, it was obviously cleaner.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't as great.
But nothing was like vastly changed because of it. It was just sharper.
Now, as a big Star Trek nerd, I like seeing the Enterprise from more than just the three stock shots that they had back then. I like seeing, they have that shot from the nacelles sort of behind looking forward, and they have one really good long shot where I'm always a sucker for when the ship looks tiny in space and you get an idea of just how big the space around it is.
Yeah, that was one of the things I always liked about Doomsday Machine.
Yeah. There's a few episodes like that in the restored ones where the ship is just tiny and you realize it's out there in the emptiness. It's just alone. And I really like that effect. So what else? Any major points you guys wanted to make? Or
I think it was Spock who said about the, it wasn't the cube, it was the second ship, actually.
Okay.
Kirk asked about its mass, and he says, it's off the scale.
So the mass scale.
No, the keyboard scale.
Right.
How small is this scale? They're exploring the universe and looking at vast planets and suns, and the immense masses that they must be in, and this little spaceship's off the scale.
How big is it, Spock? Ooh, pretty big.
I'd be willing to say quite big indeed.
It's about this big.
He's holding a ruler up to the view screen. Okay.
I don't know. I can blot it out with my thumb, so it can't be that big.
He's holding a ruler up to the screen. He's like, it's only 6 inches. We can totally take this.
I like how they still haven't gone metric in the future.
No, that's not true. They mentioned a couple of times that it's only 5,000... kilometers away or something like that. Yes, Kelly Kelly.
Oh, they said the ship was a mile long.
Oh. Well, okay, but in England, you guys are metric, but I know you still use miles occasionally.
Yes, we do, yes.
So there you go.
We're an enigma. Enigma.
No
one's built a planet-spanning government based on that. Come on.
That's a good point. So, yeah, any further points? Any additional business?
Bones was fucking awesome.
Yeah, he was.
You remember that guy?
Yeah, that guy down in engineering.
Yeah. Colin. Especially when he's with Kirk and Spock. And you thought about when he was about to die.
Yeah, they've got like 4 minutes left, and Bones, he decides to come up and just argues with Kirk about personal records.
Well, why should he change?
Well, and what's nice is Kirk is trying to keep his voice down at first because he doesn't want the crew to hear it, and Bones is just,
he doesn't want him to win.
Yeah.
But that bit was just put in there to give Kirk, like, that gives me an idea.
Yep.
I'm going to play Kerplunk with this guy.
But yeah, I did enjoy the scenes with him and Kirk.
What's that, Matt?
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a Kerplunk.
He had his first damn it, Jim, but it was weird. It was, I'm a doctor, not a moon shuttle conductor. What?
Yes, it was quite weird.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what that means.
He used to be a moon shuttle conductor when he was in college.
Right, he was Mr. Conductor on Shining Time Moon Station.
Oh my god, I would give so much to have a Tiny Bones yelling at kids and then narrating Thomas the Tank Engine.
Listen, if Alec Baldwin, George Carlin, and Ringo Starr can be Mr. Conductor, Bones could totally be Mr. Conductor.
Meanwhile, on the damn island of Sodor, Mr.
George Carlin did Thomas the Tank Engine.
That's what I'm saying.
It was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I knew about the other two, obviously.
No, Carlin was for a while.
But I didn't know. Wow.
Yep. He was the one after Ringo.
Did he talk about no religion?
Yes.
Well, in his stand-up act, he would say some horrible things. And then he would say, and remember, I'm Mr. Conductor, so you got to listen to me.
He would go, I hate kids. And remember, you're talking to Mr. fucking Conductor.
Yeah, there we go. That was it. Now I'm thinking of Mr. Conductors like doctors, because there's at least three of them, so he must have regenerated. Mr. Conductor, yes.
I can imagine George Carlin being the first one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, grumpy.
Poking things with sticks.
Yes.
That's all I know.
Well, that's all you need to know.
That and what you guys have told me, of course, which I hang on every word and remember all of it. But that's just all,
like,
really.
Just like Gav remembers Bones.
Which we have some coming cover for his next one, is the Doctor poking himself with a stick.
Oh, is that how the second Doctor comes to be? He pokes himself until he's dead, and then...
pokes himself with a stick, and then he crawls out of the hole he made in himself.
Wow. That's quite an image.
Right? Yeah. Enjoy that.
last night, Amanda, who, for those of you who are not familiar with us, is my wife, I think.
Maybe. We're not sure.
She and I were talking about the movie about John Lennon that was made not too long ago with Chris Eccleston, the Ninth Doctor.
Yes, where you see his...
He's fully... Hoo-ha. Yeah. Is that what you guys call it over there?
We do now.
That doesn't sound very British.
We were talking to a set of a woman last night in the
past. Oh, I see.
That's why it's in my head.
Well, we were discussing that he might be the first Doctor that you've ever actually seen him fully nude. And then I was, I said, well, except for William Hartnell, of course. And then I made myself vomit.
How far did Matt Smith go in that recent miniseries?
He didn't get his hoo-ha out. No.
Hoo-ha. Oh, you spelling it hoo-ha like Doctor Hoo-ha? Ah.
Damn it, why did I think of that? No, I'm not.
All right, then. So it is customary on your program to choose a companion. So I'm curious who you guys would have chosen in this episode.
Yes, we... who did you choose, Bill?
I was going to go with Bailey.
You chose Bailey to travel with the Doctor?
Yes.
Why?
He's exactly the sort of character that they have on the show.
What, idiots?
Yes. Like
So it's not that you like him, it's just that he's so much like the other companions.
Yes.
We are a nice
he's perfectly simple.
I don't want to be here.
Oh, yeah, he'd be like...
All of them?
He'd be like the bride in the first episode.
Oh.
I know now.
I know. I know.
I have enough of that with Flonk on Twitter.
And Irish Gav, what about you?
I chose Scotty because he could teach him how to drink.
That's fair. Although at this point, Scotty had what, three lines? I think
he'd be like, what is this? Hmm?
Yeah.
And then Scotty could say, it is green. I mean, all kinds of crossover jokes today.
You are. Actually, though, having someone on hand to say this is green back in the black and white days would have been very helpful.
Good job.
It is green. It is.
Oh, good. No, there've been a couple of old early black and white ones that I've seen, and a couple of times they've remarked on the colors, and I'm like, oh, thank Christ, I have no idea what color that's supposed to be. Thank you for that.
Doctor, it's so vibrant. Isn't it just? It's the brightest color I've ever seen.
Oh, come on.
You guys are jerks.
It reminds me of there was a time when they used to do snooker in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about the red color, and he says, and for those of you at home, the red is behind the blue ball.
Oh, that helps. Thank you.
He did that once.
I like that.
So have you guys chosen a quote? Do you have a joint quote, or have you chosen separate quotes?
We have chosen separate quotes.
Very well. Yes.
I will not choose the same quote as him. Gav, what's your quote?
Yes, my quote is got a slightly visual touch to it as well.
Now, those are the best quotes,
yes.
I find.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can explain what color it is as well. Yeah.
We'll do show notes, so we'll do a still if that helps.
Yes, this was when McCoy was behind the blue ball.
Oh, no, he had blue balls. That's what it was.
Damn it, Jim.
It was slash fake after all.
Damn it, Jim, I went to public school.
Now, I think it was shortly after the sort of health sort of checkup thing that mm-hmm. Kirk was having.
You know, kicking the boxes in
yes,
sort in of. Sick bay.
Yes, in his blue slipper things.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically
he was kickboxing the wall.
And Kirk had sort of literally just left, and McCoy was sort of saying to himself,
I jumped every time a light came on around here. I'd end up talking to myself.
Very nice.
Why is that visual?
Because he did it as Kirk just left the room.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you don't know that he's there by himself. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. My quote is a bit of a long one.
All right.
It's basically Kirk and McCoy with the salad. It goes thusly.
What the devil is this?
Green leaves?
It's dietary salad, sir. Dr. McCoy ordered your diet card changed. I thought you knew.
Your weight was up a couple of pounds, remember?
Will you stop hovering over me, yeoman?
Well, I'll change it if you don't like it, sir.
Bring some for the doctor, too.
No, no. No, I never eat until the crew eats.
The salad did is green, by the way.
Did we go thusly with your crew?
I did not go thusly. No.
You didn't.
You failed already.
Well, one of us will have to do a thusly just to correct for the thusly balance.
To balance out that thusly.
One final thing, English Gav, you did mention the mass scale. I'm curious if any other science things jumped out at you, like either good or bad.
Oh, there was plenty of
things. There
was
something you whinged about. Yes, there was the
and I will actually myself on one of them as well.
There was the Coromite you whinged about. You were like, oh, Kirk didn't say that would destroy his ship as well.
That wasn't a maths science thing, though.
That was a maths thing, was it?
Hmm.
Now, when they first encountered the ship, they're saying it's approaching at light speed, mm-hmm. Captain. If it's approaching at light speed, how the hell can you... Because when it gets there, that's the earliest that you're going to ever see it.
And that's not that nitpicky. That's a good point.
Yes, but then I thought, well, they actually use tachyons, which are faster than light in Star Trek. Right? Ah. So if they send tachyon fuels out for the long-range sensors.
They don't really have that long range of sensors. If it said it approaches at light speed, it would be there 2 seconds later. You might as well say nothing.
So it's like they're doing the Picard maneuver, then.
Yes.
It's approaching. Isn't it? Mind, it's here.
If anyone's interested, oh, never mind.
God damn it. I'm going to get these one of those days. So I've just forgotten how great it was, and I think it stands up against Trek and Doctor Who and Move the Notes Up, Gav. I was reading that. which is great since it's a regular episode, and I really don't need to say any of this. Yeah.
Excellent.
So there we go.
All right.
I was, sorry.
Take your time.
I really enjoyed it. It's This is essentially what I like about Star Trek episodes, these sort of episodes. It's, as you said earlier, it's quintessentially Star Trek.
Well, and I was worried that I didn't think Irish Gav would have any problems with it because he's, you know, an old school Trek fan from way back. But some people might complain that this is a slow episode because there are large sections of it where nothing happens. But it's one of those things Matt and I talked about a lot where they did tension really well.
Yeah, the fact that nothing's happening doesn't mean that it's not exciting.
No, they milked it for suspense, but on a lesser show, it would have just been boring standing around waiting. But they did it very effectively here.
I don't think it makes too much sense. You know him trying to destroy the Enterprise. Oh, it was all a test.
Well, no, he was bluffing too.
Then he'd be like, "Don't worry, you'll be seeing a lot more of these tests in the coming series."
I hope you like
tests. Yes, it's all dangerous. I'm sure you have 1,000 questions. Yes, I have many. I bet you're not going to answer a single one of them, are you, you bastard?
You bold bastard.
In his defense, he's only what, 2, maybe 3 years old.
That's true.
Yeah, who gave him a fucking starship?
Right.
I'm sorry, but the idea of him just going to a starship dealership and just be, yes, I'd like to buy a starship, and the guy going, oh my god, what's wrong with your face?
But yeah, it is the exact sort of Star Trek episode type of
it. I hope you all relish it.
Like where they're exploring new things and they don't understand it and they're trying to work it out. And
right.
All That's nope. what I don't like.
That's definitely why we picked it. We had several other candidates, but I think it really came down to this. We go on and on about how Gene Roddenberry got a little carried away with what his vision was supposed to be later on. But early on, this is a very, you know, good representation of the kind of thing he had in mind. And it was done very well.
Yes, it was.
Are we ready to press on?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
So we'll go on to Doctor Who.
What shall we talk about the bit?
You must.
Oh, right. This is a good point.
It was all right.
It was wank.
Well, we're done speaking about
all right. I am about halfway through mine, and I will choke it down because I am a good sport, but this is disgusting.
I thought it was fine.
It's very tasteless. It's like all your traditional weak tasting lines.
You were going to say North American beers.
You were going to say North American, weren't you?
No, it was not.
Go on, say it. Insult her.
We can take it. It's fine.
Because all the general.
He's going to insult Doctor Who later. You might as well.
Well, all the ones I was going to compare it to was the Carling, which is Canadian, Foster's, which is. Australian.
Gav, people can't see you doing inverted commas.
I just started doing that.
Also, obviously, we call them quotes. Right, so.
Quote marks, yes.
Most of the sort of Greek beers, lagers.
So it's just rubbish, like all beers.
It's like most lagers.
Now, would you say it tastes like moose?
I think you'd be more qualified to answer that, Matt, than any of us.
I will tell you right now, no, it does not.
Mm. What does moose taste like?
Like snake.
Oh, well, of course.
Oh, not chicken, then.
Yeah. Well, possibly pork, I'm not sure.
Well, who doesn't enjoy a good pork beer? Actually, you guys mentioned that on Drunken Time Travel. You had bacon beer, and it was awful.
We drank a pork beer.
Yes, we did.
Well, if anyone has, it would be you guys.
Yeah, or Flonk.
Yes, it was shit.
Yeah. Seattle apologizes
pork
for
shit?
That.
That's the real question.
Now, I would drink Long Pig beer.
Oh, of course you would.
Mm-hmm.
Short
pig so
beer?
Would I.
No. The beer with the refreshing hint of human flesh.
Soylent green beer, then.
Yes.
What you were...
Right.
It varies from person to person.
Right.
Hey.
So, to compensate me from drinking that crap, I am now drinking Guinness Special Export.
Well, I'm now drinking Stella Artois.
No, I'm now drinking Guinness Drought.
I don't think it's drought, Matt.
Yes, it is. It's got a U, so drought.
Very well. Well, when I finish this horrible thing, I'll have an energy drink that doesn't have any alcohol at all.
Good for you.
All right. So let's move to the second portion of the show, which is this other program we're watching.
Yes, Doctor Who. Mm. And we can now explain why we gave you the Happiness Patrol.
Very well.
Do you want me to go, Gav? Yes, you do.
Yes. Well, well, from the slightly limited options.
We've already mentioned the slightly limited options.
I thought this one sort of encompasses more of what a traditional Doctor Who episode is.
So now you're talking the original series and not including the new or everything.
Yeah, we didn't want to include the new one because you've all seen it, really.
Yeah.
So it was either this or The Rescue.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've only just done The Rescue.
So we thought, it's a bit too close to what we've already done. And although it is a damn good episode.
It was your Darmok?
Yeah.
It's basically, God almighty, was it? It's basically the Doctor going in and toppling a regime. It's just a very Doctor Who episode.
And he's got the silly bad guy.
Now, we've skipped way ahead to the seventh Doctor, is that right?
We have indeed.
Like just before the show went away for a while?
We'll get to there in about 6 years.
Right.
No, we were talking about this. I like this guy, and then he got shot.
Right.
Yes.
But not in this episode.
No.
Or
it'll be another five episodes before.
Right. You just know that off the top of your head, don't you?
I do.
I do.
I meant him, Matt.
Shut up.
All right. So we have a summary prepared for this episode.
I'm delighted to hear it.
Or epistory, as apparently it's meant to be called.
It's easier to call everything the same thing.
It's stories.
Make mistakes.
Right. And it goes, if I'm led to understand correctly, thisly. So, part one, Gem and the Holograms of Death. We open with the epic sight of an old lady frowning. She takes a sit on a park bench next to a guy in a smart fedora and ridiculous pink jammies. Then again, I don't want to waste the word ridiculous and pink because, oh boy. Meet our villains, our truly, truly outrageous villains. You know how when you were 8 or 9 and you got your mom's Footloose era exercise outfit and that pink wig she wore for Halloween and you tried on some of her makeup? No? That was just me, huh? Well, that's what these guys look like. Also, they're carrying what appears to be the result of an unholy union between a super soaker and a fire extinguisher. Enter the TARDIS. The Doctor, wearing his finest Matthew Lesko question mark suit and carrying a genuine cobblepot umbrella, is wandering around the underground BBC set, I mean totally real alien city, with... God, what happened to Ian? You guys never told me Ian was a cute mid-80s punk girl? Now I understand the appeal. Then they meet a dude in a bowler hat who is the most English thing I have ever seen. Then there's a slot machine and a mime or something. I don't know. And then, oh God, Matt, you're going to have to help me with the candy robot thing. This is Spider-Man behind a desk all over again. I will literally die of laughter like the weasels in Roger Rabbit if I think about it for too long.
Okay, so picture the big lumbering mutant from this island Earth. Except he's made from those shitty licorice all sorts that your grandma thought you liked, but in actual fact, nobody did. Now, cover him in tubes, give him a high-pitched robot voice that would put a falsetto Dalek to shame, a tinfoil mustache, and a horrible real person mouth, and you're starting to get it. Also, he kills you with jam. This is never explained.
Thank you, Matt. So while all this is going on, the evil mastermind of this wacky place, a place where everyone is expected to smile and be happy on pain of death, is watching the proceedings on a little TV monitor. I wanted to make a joke about how she looks like the villain from The Hunger Games, but I can't make that joke because she just does. Like, a lot. She has a pet... rat? Wolf? Matt and I couldn't decide what it was supposed to be, so let's split the difference and call it a wolf. Matt's name, not mine. This creature lives inside a bird cage with absolutely no indication of how it managed to crawl in through the only tiny opening. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Ian are driving around in a go-kart. Well, I say driving around. We only ever see it move about 6 feet before they run out of set. Excuse me, I mean totally real, not at all fake, completely believable alien city. Then the two of them are separated. Hot Ian is taken to the candy mines, and the Doctor hangs out with a blues man, who, like all black people, can never stop playing the harmonica. The two of them then storm the low-rent walk-and-knock-off security kitchen, which is to say they crouch behind a table, and are discovered. End of episode one.
Alright. So we join our story already in progress as the Doctor and Bleeding Gums Murphy are strapped into barber's chairs and forced to be fed British sweets. Surely the most terrifying foodstuff in the multiverse.
I don't think it's any coincidence that the Gavs got me hooked on cola cubes, and now I need two painful and expensive root canals.
British candy has destroyed lesser men than you, Al. Anyway, so the doctor escapes by forcing the candy man to have a temper tantrum, and then knocking over a stray champagne bottle of lemonade. Excellent vintage, too. Because of science, the Candyman is stuck to the floor, and the doctor and the blues man escape through a sewer pipe because easy sewer access is always important in your security kitchen. Then everyone runs around for a while, as we were warned to expect from Doctor Who. Cruella de Vil flushes her monstrous rat dog down the toilet, and it chases them for a while. Back in the kitchen, the Candyman is still stuck to the floor and screaming. This will continue until after long all of us are long dead. While all of this is happening, girl Ian makes friends with a suicidally depressed member of the Happiness Patrol, who lets her escape. She is recaptured almost instantly and sent back to be executed via firing squad and then jam. All of this is explained to us in a way that where we're supposed to assume that it makes perfect sense. I assume this is because we were missing 30 years of intricately woven backstory. The doctor sees a wanted poster for Gurleyan, which doesn't really make sense because they hung it up after she was captured, but it's an alien culture, so where do I get off pointing its flaws?
Well, they couldn't make the poster until they captured her to take her picture, obviously. Well,
of course.
That's
anyway, so the doctor grabs a conveniently surly man living in a wall and tells him that Gurleyan is about to be executed via jam. Firing squad. Also, the Candyman is still stuck to the floor.
Still or again?
Always. He is always stuck to the floor.
Episode 3, The Wolf Puppet of Death. A lot of the same stuff that happened in Episode 2 happens again. But then we get a new part, and oh boy. The doctor is singing. And not just singing, he's belting it the fuck out. He has a completely intense jam session with the blues man. No, not the jam they kill people with, different kind of jam. Also, he plays the spoons. I'm kind of having a hard time picturing William Hartnell doing something like this, but I really like to think that he did. Anyway, more chasing. Some stuff in the BBC air conditioning ducts. I mean, totally real alien sewers. And we meet... what are these guys? Sort of trolley mole men? Moley troll men? Matt, I'm going to have to defer to your knowledge of the supernatural and poorly constructed TV monsters on this one.
Imagine if Yoda and an Oompa Loompa's bastard child fucked a Nilbog troll, and you're more or less there.
Thank you, Matt. Now tell them what happens next, whilst I continue to enjoy this fine beer.
Ah! All right, so Gurleyan teaches the Yoda Loompa Nilbogs to speak punk. Okay, so the doctor sets up a demonstration in front of somewhere with a bunch of sad people to free Gurleyan. And then the Happiness Patrol are powerless to stop them because they're acting happy and rules on this planet are weird and vaguely defined. There's another thrilling go-kart chase, and then the doctor yells at some snipers, demanding they throw their guns away and change their lives, Bendis style. And that rat dog gets hit by a go-truck. After that, some more running, and then Al tells you what happens.
The people revolt. The Hunger Games Cruella de Vil lady buggers off with her Mary Kay briefcase, grief-stricken by her goddamn dead dog. Another society successfully destroyed by Kirk as he exits the planet never to be seen again. Hey, I just got how these shows are similar.
And that's how that went.
And that's how you are a second-rate drunken time travel. I'm so sorry, you guys.
That was fucking amazing.
You just insulted us.
No. I called us a second-rate drunken time travel.
All right.
We insulted us, which we're good at.
I could insult you if you like.
Oh, you will.
I will not.
As the episode goes on and I get considerably drunker, yes.
Yeah. Matt, why don't you share your first thoughts before I get into my whole deal?
I really, really enjoyed this.
And this is why, Matt, you're my favorite.
Well, thank you. No, it was exceedingly goofy. But British? It was so much fun. Completely fucking ridiculous. The first time the Candyman shows up, I lost my shit. Like, he is completely insane looking.
All right, let me talk about... I really didn't want to be the guy who hates this, and I don't hate it. I truly don't. There's a lot to like about this episode. What I liked was the fun stuff, what Matt just said. I loved the fun. There was just too much taking it seriously. There was too much like it was trying to have a message about sometimes people need to not be happy. And the villains were just, I don't know. It wasn't fun enough for me. It wasn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't sort of over the top, pulpy, almost campy enough. It was like I was meant to take these pink Frightwig lady seriously, and I just couldn't.
Here's something that occurred to me, but I don't know enough about England to know if it's true or not. Is she supposed to be, like, Margaret Thatcher or something?
Everything in the 80s was supposed to be Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
That's Doctor Who for you.
I believe she was. It was like a Margaret Thatcher type thing.
Okay.
Yes. And then,
oh,
and then
I feel smart now.
And then there was the whole gay rights thing with the TARDIS being painted pink. And the,
really?
And then the two... Sorry, guy's dying. And then the two... It's okay, I'll carry on.
It's okay,
and
he'll regenerate.
The two, God, if only he's going to be better this time.
And then Osprey, the two... Yeah.
And then the two people that went away... Speaking. So, and then the two people that go away at the end, the husband and then the guy that made the Candyman, obviously that's a whole gay thing as well.
Is it really?
Oh, well,
they were wearing pink.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
Yeah, everyone was.
Right. I assumed they were wearing white and some...
Gay.
I assume that they were wearing white and somebody put a red shirt in the wash and now everyone's wearing pink.
Everyone put a red... Dalek in the wash.
Right.
Everyone's wearing pink.
So, really, I mean, was that gay stuff intentional or are you just reading that into it?
I can't remember if that's intentional or not. I think it is.
Because that would be interesting.
The Margaret Thatcher thing.
Well, to be fair, you don't know who Bones is. The Margaret Thatcher thing was intentional, I believe.
Well, and honestly, and really, this isn't me being disparaging. I think most things written in England in the 80s had some kind of anti-Thatcher. Like, every artist living in the UK in the 80s just could not stand her. And, like, almost everything that's semi-serious that I've read from that period just has something against her. They really didn't like that woman.
I think Doctor Who in that era was particularly known for its political agendas at the time. Right?
Really?
I love the idea that Doctor Who in the 80s was known for its political agendas.
Yeah.
You have no idea how happy that makes me.
Now, what...
I thought it was.
I remember that one. I don't know about the other.
Was it just Nathan Jonathan Turner, whatever his name is?
John Nathan Turner.
That's him.
That was close.
Nathan Jason.
One of those three named men, you know.
Yes.
You right know. Name, wrong order.
Yeah. So okay.
Well, wasn't Ace a big deal? Like, was having a punk on TV, like, wasn't that kind of a big thing?
Well, I really liked her because she's, and we'll get to this in 6 years, because she's not your typical screaming companion, which is who she directly followed was the one who screamed all the time.
Mel.
So yeah. Bailey.
So Bailey, yes. Yeah, so that was why I liked her.
No, I quite liked her.
She loves going around blowing things up.
Yeah, really. That's Amanda was very familiar with this stuff, and she helped me through some of the stuff that I just wasn't that familiar with. Because, and I'm not, this isn't a criticism of you guys, but we gave you, like, at the very beginning episode, and you gave us something with 30 years of, you know, of baggage.
Well, there wasn't really that much.
No, there wasn't. But to know who Ace was, you know, at the beginning, Amanda could give me, you know, little tips, things like that. And she said, yeah, she's always carrying explosives, and the doctor's always saying, please don't blow that up.
Yes, that was a running sort of thing.
No, she became my favorite character almost immediately.
Yeah. No, I quite like, I mean, I found her quite attractive, but beyond that, it looked like she was very resourceful. She could handle things on her own when they were split up, which I liked.
Yeah, and she has a lot of history. Mm. Not just with the doctor, but, you know, those things, and especially in the next series that sort of dealt with.
Oh, nice.
I assume she's related to Vivian from The Young Ones.
She was Vivian's mother.
Well, time travel.
Exactly. What about the doctor then?
I really liked him. Like,
yeah, he was great.
And I'd never seen anything with this doctor before. I assumed that toward the end of the series, like toward, you know, right before it got canceled, I assume that that doctor must have been terrible for the show to get canceled. But not the case. Because,
they got very low ratings, but he was, I think it's just, I don't know why people are idiots, obviously. But I really do think he's my favorite doctor.
Well, now, I was going to ask you about this.
I'm sorry we couldn't get to see him at his best, at his conniving, planning best.
No, that wasn't the one where he's,
I definitely got a hint of that, but I'll get to that in a second.
He sort of manipulates, he does sort of manipulate time so that he can play, he sort of figuratively plays chess against,
Not poker.
No, not poker. No. This is why we chose this, because
it's a nice contrast. I see. No, Gav, let me ask you, he's your favorite, was he your first?
No, the Fifth Doctor was my first.
Wow.
It's pretty good fifth, or that's a pretty good first Doctor.
I sort of assumed.
I do love him.
I sort of assumed he was your favorite, and again, not a criticism, but I assumed he's your favorite because you kind of grew up with him. It seems like that would have been the time when you were prime Doctor Who age as a kid.
Well, if this is my first, and then, you know, watching him, I thought he's better. It's a lot like James Bond.
Right.
Timothy Dalton is my favorite now.
Really?
And he didn't. I think I sort of grew up with Roger Moore.
Hmm.
I think they're just like weird choices. Maybe I'm a hipster.
You like the same
stuff time before. To find out.
Just like about a spot because nobody else does.
No. Hey, wait a minute. Isn't your favorite the Eighth? I can't think of a more obscure choice.
The one who was around for about 15 minutes?
Yeah, the one who had 90 minutes of total screen time ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, not even that. The movie was 90 minutes, so he wasn't even in it.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, he was off screen sometimes.
I think he was in for maybe an hour.
Oddly enough, that was my first Doctor.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, dear.
I watched that movie when it first came out on Fox when I was like 10.
On Fox.
Fox.
That explains so much.
Yep.
I really like the Doctor. It took me the three episodes to warm to him. In the first one, I was like, I don't really get it. He's got this very sort of over-the-top way of, you know, he loves rolling his R's and being very...
He really loves rolling his
he's
R's.
He's very sort of, I don't want to say flamboyant, because that implies something else about Pink TARDIS.
Oh, God, a flamboyant Doctor, you don't say.
Yeah, but this is the old series, Matt.
Oh, God, a flamboyant Doctor from the old series, you don't say. Have you seen What's-His-Face?
Yeah,
with curly hair?
I have. Which one?
Sixth Doctor?
Is it Colin Baker?
Is he the blonde one?
Yes. He's, you know, he's going to be on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here over here. It's like a reality show.
Oh,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
You and me, though.
No, like I said, in the first one, I didn't quite get what his deal was. And then he's got this way of taking charge when he enters a room where he does that thing where, stop, where are you going? Oh, I belong here. You're the one who's wrong. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll continue. You know, he's got that attitude where, like, if you walk into a room with exactly the right sort of authoritative tone, everyone will just sort of concede to you, and he's totally like that.
Yeah, like the way he took charge of the census guy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And the snipers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Also that was that. A weird scene. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I didn't...
So, let's go with your good thing and your bad thing, Matt. I like being in charge.
end of the day, my good thing was Ace. Every time she showed up, I was just delighted. Also, I like her pulling the bomb out of the go-kart.
Yeah.
Or no, I love him pulling the bomb out of the go-kart.
She's like, I really want to pull that out. No, just get away.
Yeah, just go on.
Never get to do anything.
Yeah, she's probably she's one of my favorite companions. Here.
Just delightful.
She's one of the better ones, yeah.
Hmm.
Also, I like the enthusiasm behind, I've got some badges.
She'd love some of our new apps.
I know a song about a guy who's in love with a girl, but then she gets killed and he's really depressed.
Oh, God, that was fantastic.
She goes back for the ring and then she's killed by the train and he's really depressed for the rest of his life. No? Okay. You'd like The Wire.
And my bad thing, a lot of stuff kept happening that happened in the second one.
What, you mean like people being captured and things?
People getting captured and people running around. The Candyman gets stuck to the floor.
Oh my God, he got stuck to the floor like 7 times.
And then he gets stuck to the floor again.
Yeah.
Yeah, see that stuff happens. See the series we're watching at the moment? Mm. People get captured and released a lot.
That old woman puts that wolf down the toilet. And then she puts that wolf down the toilet again.
Yeah.
It sounds like a song.
The wolf down the toilet.
Is that a new verse to the song from the Gunfighters?
Yes.
Oh, God.
I really like that wolf as well.
How did he get in that bird cage?
I've no idea. Built it around it.
Okay. How did they get him out?
So it was never out of the birdcage. That episode.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder it died in the sewer then. It had no idea what to do.
Yeah. Too much open space.
How much did that thing go through once it got into the sewer? It got blown up and roof fell on it. And
yeah.
And jammed.
That poor bastard. Jammed.
What was the point of Candyman, really, in this episode?
That is a good question.
Well,
it was one of the best things about the episode, you twat.
I love that fucking ridiculous-looking guy, but he made no... Like, there was no point to him.
There was literally no point. No. It was just there to look weird and stupid.
Yes,
he didn't offer anything to this story at all.
Here he comes.
The people who made Licorice All Sorts actually sent, you know, sent them a legal letter saying, you know, it's going against Bertie Bassett, our trademark, so they can never use Candyman ever again.
Oh.
And then Doctor Who sent them back a letter saying that Licorice All Sorts are completely inedible.
Yeah, nobody eats your product. You must be going out of business any day now.
Yeah.
This episode was filmed in 2108 after your claim expired.
Very nice. Now, I would love to see Matt Smith fight the Candyman. It's really too bad that they can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
No, they can't, actually. That's a shame.
Yeah.
That is a shame.
Is it?
So what's your bad thing,
Oh, do I have to start with my bad thing?
I think I'm going to a good place. I'm going to start with your bad thing.
Very well.
Unless you want to do it the other way around.
No. Like I say, I couldn't buy into the seriousness of it. I genuinely like the goofiness. I like the fun. My favorite episode of the new series was Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. That is what I love about Doctor Who. It's just when you see the Doctor having fun and there's just goofy shit happening and he's like, this is great. Whee! Like, I love that. I love just the enthusiasm and the sort of pulpy feel that the universe has these weird little corners that he loves exploring. But then there's this weird sort of heavy-handed thing about happiness or I don't know. When I'm meant to take people with pink hair seriously, I just don't buy it. I don't care who you are. I cannot take pink hair seriously. It's just it's a block that I have.
Yeah, you wouldn't like the Seventh Doctor. Fourth Doctor would definitely be for you.
Mm.
That's Tom Baker, right?
Yes, Tom Baker. He's insane.
Well, and it's
although you didn't like the Pirate Planet when I showed you it, when I asked, did you?
No, there were the two Douglas Adams ones I watched. The Pirate Planet I didn't like, but I loved, was it City of Death?
Yes.
That was fantastic.
I know that much.
Yeah, of course it was. No, that one was fantastic, and I'm glad because I didn't care for Pirate Planet at all. But no, I genuinely like the fun. And I felt like there was some of it here, and I think part of it was just the padding. You guys have to admit, there's a lot of padding in this series.
There's a lot of fucking padding.
Most of the serials could be one episode shorter than they are.
Well, yeah, a lot of, yeah. I think, this is what, 25 years ago?
Hmm.
It is 25 years ago, 24, 25. Yeah. You see that with the first series of Star Trek, or Next Generation, and you see that with this, and you see it with the old Doctor Who, and you see it with the old original series as well. Just the things are more fast moving now.
That's true.
I'm sure I've said that on DTT before.
In this format, because there are three episodes, you feel like, well, why are there, you know what I mean? If you have an hour to fill, that's one thing, but if you can pick how many parts it is, why would you pick three?
Well, in that series, they had, or season for you guys, they had 2-4 episodes. They had to be cheaper, you see, because they had they had 14 episodes to fill. So, you know, the less sets you have to make, the better.
Really? I would not have gotten the idea watching this episode that they cut any corners budgetary wise at all. I mean, they spared no expense.
Al, I think this might be sarcasm.
That will lead nicely into my good thing, actually.
What's your good thing? Sarcasm?
Listen.
Yeah, that's my good thing.
Listen, nobody does sarcasm better than the English.
Sarcastic detector has exploded.
Nobody does sarcasm better than the English. I got it. Like, you guys invented sarcasm, and I will be eternally grateful to you. No, honestly.
Gee, thanks.
You would think that the low-budget stuff would be a bad thing. It's not. I love that. That's part of the fun thing that I'm talking about. It's so goofy. There's a charm to it that you can tell they have little money to work with, but there's so much going on. There's the wolf thing. There's those weird little troll creatures. There's a lot of different monsters and animals and, you know, weird stuff. And while it all looks ridiculous, it's interesting that they didn't just give up and say, no, let's show two people in a room. They were very ambitious with the limited resources they had, and I really like that.
Yeah.
Is that all you're going to say? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
It is a good point.
I would rather watch a series that has lots of big ideas and no money than the other way around.
Well, this is true. Which brings us to Stargate.
Take that, Stargate. We hate you.
Or most other TV sci-fi series, really.
True.
Oh, yeah. Gene Roddenberry's Stargate.
Mm.
Take that, Gav.
Show of hands, fans of Andromeda? Nobody? That's what I thought.
What's Andromeda?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda.
Oh, well, that explains everything.
Andromeda?
I didn't realize he did.
There were two or three series in the 80s that they, like, realized, or might have been the early 90s when he died. They realized, oh, God, Gene's dead. What are we going to do? We have all these notebooks of his crappy, discarded ideas. Let's make them into series. Mm-hmm. And they did it, like, three times. It was awful.
Didn't he do Earth Above and Beyond or something?
I think he did.
Earth Final Conflict.
I did enjoy it.
Did you enjoy
it? I enjoyed it, yeah.
You do, like, a lot of shit, though.
We have a guy like that, too.
I mean that in the nicest possible way.
No, we have a guy like that, too. It's all right. No, I really do not want to give the impression that I didn't like this. I did like it.
If you didn't like it, that's fine.
No.
It doesn't sound like you didn't like it.
No, I'm just saying it doesn't matter to me.
No, I know.
Well, it does, but...
No, I think there is
I didn't sleep last night. Came
oh, God,
no.
I actually liked it.
There is a very distinctive, unique vibe to Doctor Who that being with what I grew up with, where I grew up, I don't really get it. Like, I don't mean I don't understand it. I just, there's an aesthetic, there's a mentality, there's, I'm missing, English Gav, you'll relate to this. I'm missing a frame of reference.
His visual is just like Terminator. And all the time it says missing visual reference.
Directive 1, what is Star Trek? I feel
Directive
like...
2, what is everything else?
But Doctor Who in the UK is this cultural institution, and maybe it wasn't with, you know, in at this point with the Seventh Doctor, but overall it is this incredible monolith of, you know, everyone grew up with it. Everyone, like when I watch shows like QI, which are, you know, adult comedians talking, they all say Dalek and they all know what it is. It's
When I started my new job, mm-hmm. we did a Pictionary type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were into teams, you know, for icebreakers. Mm-hmm. What the fuck that means. Mm-hmm. But and then one of the people on our team was given Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't know what Dalek was.
Now, did everyone else in attendance mock him for that? Because I assume most people did.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I couldn't believe that. How can you not know what a Dalek is?
Like, was he American or something?
No. I think he was just an idiot.
Well, that makes sense.
But now, compare that to here, where if I know what a Tribble is, no one else in the room is going to know that.
Hmm. Yeah, but... Klingon would be an acceptable.
I suppose that's true. But not 20 years ago.
But people are going to know what a Klingon is.
Not 20 years ago. I don't think so.
Well, this was only this year.
That was when Trek was that was when TNG was big.
But TNG was never big. It was big for a syndicated show. It was big among nerds.
It was big enough that people knew, like,
people
were aware of it.
No. Like,
I think
my coworkers at the time did not know anything about it.
Really?
Yeah, but no, this was this year. the person didn't know what a Dalek was.
Well, yeah, that's ridiculous. That's unacceptable.
Arguably, Doctor Who is like more popular than ever right now.
Well, this is true.
But that's why I'm sort of jealous.
Not if you read the Daily Mail, it's nobody watches it.
No one reads the Daily Mail, Kath.
What's the Daily Mail?
They only get 5 million viewers.
It's like Fox TV made on paper.
Well, it literally is, right?
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Isn't it run by Rupert Murdoch?
Yes.
Yeah,
billionaire tyrant.
Yes, billionaire tyrant. Rupert Murdoch.
Yes,
but
exactly.
My overall point is, you guys have a culture that is more accepting of that sort of thing, and was for many, many years. It's only recently become okay to be a nerd, like, and to like this stuff, and for it to be mainstream here. And I think Doctor Who is something you could just buy into, whereas for me it was like, well, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, our culture is not nerd friendly. It is now, but as a kid, I just didn't get Doctor Who at all.
But that's changed as well.
Yes.
Culture's become, I mean, not completely nerd friendly, but you know, that has changed in the last 20 years as well.
Absolutely. But because of that, I didn't grow up on this stuff. I don't even think we had it here. We had it on PBS late at night, but it was not very accessible.
Yeah, it'd be like Monty Python, probably.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I knew enough about Python that I wanted to track it down, whereas Doctor Who, I didn't have anyone to recommend it to me, so I never really sought it out. It was fairly obscure over here, and because of that, I didn't grow up with it, and watching it now feels like I'm missing some vital thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Was it more of a thing in Canada?
I mean, Amanda watched it when she was little.
Yeah, I knew she knew it, so I just wondered if, you know.
But I wasn't exposed to it until I was in high school when they started playing it on our version of the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, it was never that high profile.
And then
here.
It was just the weird black and white show that came on after Weird Science.
Yeah, so we never, you know, there was probably not a time in your, you know, adolescence that you didn't know what Doctor Who was.
No.
It's just...
I would have known. I knew what Doctor Who was from when I was small, really.
Right.
I probably knew what it was, but I never watched it.
But it's still...
I've heard of it. Yeah.
An inherent part of your culture is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I would say that's very much true.
And that's the big reason. I feel like there's something going on that I don't quite understand, and I feel like that's probably why.
I don't think it's really seen as a huge sci-fi thing here.
What do you mean?
You know, it's part of the culture, mm-hmm. But it's not.
It's not considered sci-fi.
Well,
yeah.
Recently,
I see that.
Recently with the Olympics in London, they had all these sort of towers of you know, like English culture. They had like James Bond, and they had Harry Potter, and Doctor Who's part of that. They're, you know, you guys are that proud of it. It's that important.
I was actually really shocked that there was no Doctor Who stuff.
There was, though, wasn't there?
No, I watched
the opening ceremony. They were going to have a TARDIS materializing. Or
I thought Matt Smith did something.
No.
Oh, well, I'm mistaken.
No. Well, not in the opening ceremony, sorry.
No. All they had was just the sound of the TARDIS materializing.
Oh, yeah, and they were going to have all the Doctors,
yeah,
you know, on a screen or something.
But it was nice to hear the TARDIS materializing.
Right. It's always nice to hear that.
Baseball.
Always nice to hear from a TARDIS.
It's a shame they couldn't devote anything more to it.
Right. No, I've gotten the impression that it's that big of a deal there, though. It's one of the sort of the cornerstones of your culture.
It is. I would say so. It is, you know, because it takes up a lot of media pages and things whenever there's a new doctor or speculating about a new doctor.
Right.
Even after the doctor is just regenerated. You know, who's going to be the next one?
Who's going to be the next doctor? We just got this one.
Who's going to be the next one but three?
Coming up on Doctor 45. Everyone's really excited.
Yeah, it's just like the...
Whereas if they recast
That's
Captain...
It. It's just like your politics.
Politics.
If they have another captain in Star Trek...
Yeah, there would be some, you know, maybe now... But in the 80s, there was not a lot of press about Picard. There was
a
little. Like, oh, Star Trek's coming back. Ha ha, nerds. Ha ha, parents' basement. Whatever.
Ha ha, flogging a dead horse.
Right.
Well, it's probably different because probably different. Well, Picard always likes his dead horse.
He does love his
horse. It's probably
different. Saddle.
It's probably different because Doctor Who's the same character. It's the same show that's been going on. Whereas Star Trek... ended in the 70s and there were just some movies and then they decided to bring it back to TV.
Well, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk about the two shows. They've both endured. Doctor Who's coming up on its 50th anniversary and Star Trek will be there in 2016.
Yeah.
These shows have been around forever through different means. You, like you said, it's the same character. Whereas with Star Trek, they've had to sort of change things a bit.
I mean, it's only the same universe, but it's like...
Yeah, but on the other hand, while the Doctor...
Just not back to going back to the original guys.
But on the other hand, while the Doctor is the same character every time, he's not.
That's true.
You were just saying if I liked goofy fun, I should go to the fourth Doctor because he's completely different than the seventh. They're different guys.
It's the same character, but they're different stories.
Right. And they act differently. Like they, you know, there might be some...
I don't know if they act... Because, well, I remember reading some writer of Doctor Who, and he says he always writes the Doctor the same way.
Really?
Mm.
So the difference is just in the actors.
I don't know whether you should.
Right.
I feel that they're different. You know, they're the same basic character, but they have different personalities to them.
Well, it feels like they've...
They've got the same base sort of motivation and character behind it, but they've all got the extra bits that make them unique.
Right. Well, I mean, even just in the new series, just seeing the difference between Eccleston and then Tennant and then Matt Smith, you could definitely see they have the same basic moral code. They have the same interests. But other than that, they seem like very different people to me. Almost to the extent of Star Trek captains.
Yeah, I could say that. They're basically the same. You know, they're trying. I mean, they're not, one of them's not evil or anything.
Right. Well, Sisko sometimes.
One of them should be.
I can't believe you said I was evil.
Very nice.
I'm not the evil one. I'm the woman.
Oh, you shut up. It's not nice to hear from a woman. Okay, so that's an interesting topic. Is
comparing and contrasting?
Yes, comparing and contrasting. No, I mean, we have the different Star Trek captains, and some of them are better than others.
Well, it's the same with doctors, yes.
Well, like I say, though, there was a point where Doctor Who dropped off in popularity. It went away for a while, and it got rebooted. The same thing happened with Star Trek.
This is true, yes.
Now, the...
But it's in the same universe.
Right.
Yeah.
It was sort of in the same universe with the movie of Star Trek, yes.
Well, they managed to incorporate a nice little loophole.
It's not anymore.
Right.
Well, they've changed the universe now. Right.
They've changed it.
It's in the same story.
Has happened.
Time frame. Well, it all runs on. And that's what I loved about the movie.
Right.
That it's not set in a different universe or anything. They just changed the current universe. But within the story.
It's not set in the same universe, they just changed the current universe.
No, it's not set in a different universe.
Right. It is.
It's not.
It is. That's the point.
It's not.
It is.
No, it's not.
This has to be us.
But it is, though.
But you're just as much an expert as we are. Okay,
know, he's not going to believe me.
It's physically the same space, but now new events are happening.
Yeah, because they went back in time.
Right.
It is, but everything's different now.
Right.
Yeah, because they've gone back in time and changed it. But it's the same universe, just a different time frame.
Do you see what I have to work with?
I knew a time when you wouldn't even say that word, so...
The movie picked up from the end of the current universe, and then they went back in time and created a new path in the same universe.
Yes.
Right, but it was a different universe, like, being created from that first universe.
They basically got to have a reboot, but also keep it consistent so that things, you know, things all follow together.
So, Gav, are you basically saying Enterprise is the same, so that's fine?
Well, Enterprise is the only thing that survived the change.
Same. Nothing fine about that.
Are we on about this series?
Enterprise is the only thing that survived from.
Yeah, that was unchanged because it was before.
Yes.
Okay. Listen, we all have our regrettable periods, and that's kind of what I was leading into. Is there a Doctor that you guys feel the same way that we feel about, say, Janeway? Where you're just like, oh, God, we have to do this Doctor now.
Do you want to say it after five, Gav?
fifth.
No. One, two, three, four, five, sixth.
And he's your science expert, huh?
Apparently. Yeah, the Sixth Doctor wasn't that great on TV.
No, was it his acting? Was it the writing? Was it everything? What?
It was the writing, I would say.
I don't know. I'm surprised I didn't like it because he was a cunt.
You do have a type.
Yes, basically.
Is he the one in the white suit with the celery, or is he the one that dressed like a clown?
Just like a clown.
Yes, okay.
Yes, the Candyman was the Doctor at one point.
Oh,
yes.
God.
He inherited a companion that we liked. Go on, name of
the Perry.
Perry, yes.
Oh, yeah, I know Perry because there's that...
because of her tits, yes.
Yes, thank you.
I love that you're...
From the get-go, he treated her like shit, and he just didn't want to know her, and he just treated everyone like a bastard.
But then the same Doctor was on Big Finish Audios.
Yeah.
And he was good.
So you got to realize that it wasn't his fault, it was the writing, because then when they paired him up with the writing.
I think it was the writing. They were just making him very violent. Mm.
Yeah. On the audios, he turned into one of the better Doctors. Huh. He's actually topped a few polls for who was the best Doctor.
Is he?
That's odd.
You've outdone Pratt.
Oh,
yeah. Whereas I can't imagine if they did a series of audios with Kate Mulgrew that those would still be any good.
No.
Oh my God, then you're just breaking her down to her worst feature.
Yep.
But I think you could.
Well, of course you could. You could do anything.
If they did them with good writing.
Really? You think they could salvage that?
No.
After watching seven seasons of Voyager and writing about each one of them, you really think they could salvage Janeway?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Oh, that was very forceful, wasn't it? There were a number of... There were 12, I'm going to say, great episodes of Voyager.
12. Out of 180.
Out of seven seasons.
Yeah.
Yes, this is what I'm saying. There were 12. So surely someone could write...
Well, that's a fair point.
Within the audio. See, if they were all good within this audio medium.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. All it's right. Not going to happen. But
no, of course not.
It's theoretically possible.
Right.
Just like communism.
Well, I mean, Star Trek exists in a future that's basically communist. I mean, there's no money. Everyone, you know, can do whatever they want, and the workers control the means of production.
Mostly Tung is the Federation president.
Right. He's just turned into a dog now.
Yeah, apparently. Another thing. Doctor Who is a small cast.
Uh-huh.
So
usually just have two repeating characters, right? Or occasionally three.
Basically. So it's wherever they are, the planet, the time, or the plot that generally drives it. Mm-hmm. So it can be anything. Whereas Star Trek, you know, there's a bigger cast because it's the crew and stuff. There's a lot of shows where it's just on the ship with the characters that they have. Whereas Doctor Who, I think there's only been one where it's just been in the TARDIS.
Yeah, you couldn't really do a bottle show on Doctor Who.
No, I have thought about that a lot before, but you can't really do it.
No.
You would need other characters to do that.
Yep. No, that's a fair point. But then you have the argument of, okay, Star Trek, like the Enterprises and Voyager could go... could go to different places and see different things every week and meet different characters. But the reason Deep Space Nine is my favorite, and I'm pretty sure Matt's favorite.
Yes.
Mine.
Is it really good?
Mine. I love DS9.
It's so good.
But the reason that I think it was so good because of exactly the opposite reason, because it had a huge cast and because they couldn't just ruin a society and ride off into the sunset. Every week they had to live with the consequences of what they had done. And every week, you know, if you did something terrible last week, it's still there because you haven't left.
I have to live
with it. It brought civilization into the series.
Exactly. And that's the reason why.
Which is the complete opposite of Doctor Who.
Right. Where he did that Kirk thing.
Like in the Happiness Patrol, he toppled that society.
Right.
Or that government and then buggered off.
And like I said, half
what would happen after that.
Like I said, sort of half jokingly, Kirk did that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is.
And then
like, we kid about it, but he did it.
Yes. That is definitely a trait that both shows share.
But they're both about, you know, well, at a very basic level about seeing what's out there. Mm-hmm. But then you've got Prime Directive on Star Trek, you know, about not interfering, supposedly.
That's what the Doctor does.
That's true. Exactly.
Doesn't he have, in general, sort of a, not exactly nonviolent, but he tries not to, you know.
He's apparently not violent, but I think that just means getting everyone else to be violent.
Nah, that's
so he doesn't have to.
He's a bit of a puppet master, then.
Yes.
Let's let him fight.
Exactly.
Overall,
they do explore in the new series a lot more.
I think my main problem, and I don't want to call it a problem because I still do enjoy the show, but the reason I don't hang on to it every week like a lot of people do is exactly what I was saying. I like the fun, the sort of whimsical, the goofiness of it. But the show tends to get a little serious and dark, and that's, I don't know, it doesn't work for me. Most people like it, but it just doesn't, I don't know, everyone's sad all the time.
See, on the other hand,
on Terra Alpha.
The saddest of all doctors.
Hmm?
My favorite was Eccleston. He's the saddest of all doctors.
I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think, because I really liked that first series of when it came back, I think he was dark, but his surroundings weren't, as I recall. There was a lot of, like, contrast between him being sort of tortured, I guess, about the Time War or whatever it was. But there was still that, because you want to introduce it to a new audience, that sense of adventure, that sense of, let's go, this is fun.
I mean, there's that, but then you watch an episode like Dalek, which is just bleak.
Well, that's a good point. But I don't know. It's mostly what I'm talking about is more the way it is now, a lot with David Tennant and a bit with Matt Smith. It's like I say, everyone's sad all the time. Everyone's always like, I don't know. Nobody gets a happy ending and everyone's just making sad eyes. And
I'd be sad too if I had to hang out with Donna.
Well, that's a good point.
Well, that's your Stephen Moffat, Joss Whedon, Brian Bendis Methodist.
That's fair. I think Joss Whedon balanced it with a little more levity. That's my opinion.
Oh, he's very good at that, yes.
Yeah. Whereas with Doctor Who, it sometimes just sort of gets absorbed in the seriousness, I think.
I'll be interested to see, you know, now that there's a new companion and he's sort of trying to break from, you know, the sort of stories before, if it'll be different with the new series. Well, it's just a different companion, but I'll be interested to see whether that's different.
Well, and I think that's one of the strengths of the series is every time you change doctors, every time you change companions, you're basically getting a tiny little reboot and getting new audiences in by saying, you know, it's like comics relaunching at issue one. Mm-hmm. You can say, here's a good point to start because here's a new cast, basically. And the show gets to keep doing that over and over again. And so you constantly get a point where people can jump in. Whereas with Star Trek, especially with a show like DS9, if you're jumping in at season three, you're fucking lost.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll jump in at the beginning of season three. Oh, right. No, that's part four of six.
Yeah. But, like, I know...
You gotta go back another couple episodes.
Wasn't it recently Stephen Moffat? Wasn't it recently Stephen Moffat said that Doctor Who's not really about Doctor Who, it's about the companion?
Yes.
Oh, that makes sense.
He writes the story.
He says more about the companion, yeah.
They're sort of the audience identification character, right?
He wasn't talking about Ian, though, yeah.
I thought they were all Ian.
Who's the Ian?
Sexy Ian, smart Ian.
Who's the Ian now?
Who's the more Ian? The Ian or the Ian who follows him?
That was a Star Wars joke.
So now we're running an hour and a half already and we haven't even gotten to the questions yet.
Holy shit.
Never mind. People will listen.
I think we should split this.
I hope so.
I think we should split this. I think we should. We should.
Like we do every episode we do with these guys?
Yeah.
I agree. We should split it.
I think we should.
I don't know how.
Well, no. We should start wrapping this up. And then, yeah. We should.
And then do questions in the next one.
Exactly. Because we got a lot of questions, and I think they'll lead to a lot of interesting discussion. So do we have any further business with our Who episode? Oh, I suppose we have to choose quotes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, didn't you do quotes? No, you
did. No, we did. You did.
No. Matt, why don't you go first?
I like the blues man describing the doctor.
You're a nice guy, doctor, but a little weird. Enough of the little.
All right. I liked...
I was going to say, how does it go?
It goes it goes thusly.
There, now the thusly
never
balance has been
I
restored.
Didn't help.
Oh, I say that all the time. My quote is the bit that I was talking about before, where the doctor just sort of takes command and walks into a situation where he should be arrested or captured, as some might say, and instead
he's so afraid of being captured.
Yes, and instead convinces everyone that he's just, you know, totally in charge. And it goes thisly.
Name?
I'm the doctor. Haven't we met?
I'm sorry, that's classified information.
You're Trevor Sigma, aren't you?
Galactic Census Bureau, I ask the questions.
Do you ask the questions?
I'm sorry, that's classified information. Address?
Which one?
If you live here, I need a town and a street. If you're an alien, I need a home planet. Except when you spend more than half the working year away, in which case I need a planet of origin.
That's classified information. Name?
What?
I ask the questions. Name?
Trevor Sigma.
Address?
Galactic Center.
Sound in, Doctor.
Questionnaire. Occupation?
Galactic Census Bureau. Authorized to enter all Alphan property and to interview all Alphans.
Good. Take me to the leader.
So I think that should be the end of our part one. I think, like I say, we have questions to answer and we can continue those in part two because we don't want to make a 7-hour podcast.
You don't.
No, I want to talk to these guys for 7 hours, but I don't want to edit 7 hours of footage. That's
so, is that it then?
I believe that it is. How do we end this? I don't even know.
Off you go then.
Off you go then.
All right. Well, go, Gav. End the show.
Mendoza.
That was good. That was fine.
Yeah. Soupy twist.
Soupy twist is right.
In the next episode, you'll hear English Gav say.
So, after this title, I guess.
And you'll hear Matt say.
Hang on, I'll just take the mic in with me. No!